Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
Welcome and thank you for joining us today. This is an hour dedicated to understanding a little more about ourselves, our beliefs, and how we approach enlightenment. Indeed, an hour devoted to learning something more, not just about the world of shoes and ships and sealing wax, but about how, what, and why we think as we do. An hour for the open-minded, willing to challenge some of those old ideas about who we are and what we might become. I'm Eldon Taylor, and this is Provocative Enlightenment. All right, our chat room is open, and my lovely partner, Ravinder, awaits you there now. You can log on by going to Eldon Taylor, that's ELDONTAYLOR.com/chat. So, Rav, say hello to everyone and offer up another of your delightful chat room invitations.
Delightful chat room. It's a delightful chat room. So, of course, you have to come in there. You know, the conversation's always lively. There are great friends. It's a great way to connect with like-minded people and share ideas and grow a little bit more. We can all do with some growing. So do come join me. It is at eldontaylor.com/chat. Come in, say hello, join the conversation.
Okay, now you're missing a partner today. And I think you should give a shout out to her and tell everybody where she is and why she's not in the chat room.
We are missing a very important chat room member today, and that is Andrea, because Andrea is in the hospital. So we are going to give a special shout out to Andrea. Hopefully this means the little baby is on the way. So everyone, just send her a little bit of good energy. Send out a cheer for her. Send out, you know, the extra support. Just let's hope this is a real easy delivery for her, and we'll keep you informed.
That we will. Okay, each week I read some of your letters as our way of expressing appreciation for the very important role you play in making this show successful. Last week, our guest was Eva Hare, and our discussion was all about consciousness, what it might be and what it isn't. Richard wrote, "So very great. Eva did her homework, did not fall into the traps of subjectivism. She very adroitly avoided just giving her opinion. She referred to discoveries and observations by credible people. I was very impressed. A most satisfying show." Della commented, "What a terrific interview, or should I say conversation, between you and Eva. I love the definition you provided at the end of the show for consciousness." Amy wrote, "I just finished listening to your show. I just wanted to tell you how truly amazing you are. Thank you for being a part of my experience." Well, it's indeed our pleasure, isn't it, Ravinder? Mm-hmm. Veronica wrote, "I have to tell you, I absolutely think you have the best radio voice, so energetic and vibrant. I have been listening to your show for about 5 months now, and today's show. Your response, honestly, in regards to the letter read in the beginning of the show, was a breath of fresh air. Thank you for all of your expertise, guidance that you share the world with. It's greatly appreciated." Bob wrote, "What a delightful show today. That was the best integration of the chat room into the whole program that I have seen to date. Eldon, you gave the best description of my political philosophy of any I have ever heard. May I quote you?" Well, of course you can. You can quote me all you want, Bob. Now, what do you think of that comment about your chat room, Rav?
It's a great chat room. It is the best.
What was the secret to integrating your chat room so well last week?
Oh, Eva was actually in the chat room too. So she was responding to questions in there as well. So, yeah, it was a very special one.
See, and you need to let everybody know that very often our guests are in the chat room. So,
yep,
and especially
the guest,
during the breaks.
It can be the guest. It can be one of the guest assistants. So we often do get inside information and
that's right.
Additional information.
All right, moving on. Kimberly wrote, "Eldon, I wanted to let you know that I love your book, What If? I just finished it recently and enjoyed reading about things that I have wondered about myself. Going to look into some of your other books. Blessings to you." Well, thank you, Kimberly, and I'll use your letter to segue into reminding all of you who have not yet obtained your copy of What If to go to my website and select the special offer banner for the book on my homepage for some really exciting free gifts that are yours when you do get your copy of the new paperback release. This is a limited offer, so don't wait around too long. Selena wrote, "Your CDs and books have been helping me to defeat the depression and self-defeating beliefs that I've been dealing with for almost half of my life." Samuel wrote, "I purchased your product in cassette format years ago, but it was stolen and I would like to replenish my former materials, which I valued greatly for their benefits to me personally. Now, I'll use your letter, Samuel, to inform all of you of our InterTalk policy regarding lost, broken, stolen CDs and tapes. We have a replacement program, and so long as we can verify your original purchase, we replace the program for only $7. Now, if you have the product and it's damaged, you can send that to us with your $7 plus shipping, and we will send you a brand new CD under that same replacement policy. All right, Thomas wrote, during the early 90s, I bought some tapes from you, Accelerated Learning in Ozo, Echotech, and the InterTalk Subliminal, so I could listen to them over and over. I remember that time as being the point when I really acquired an appetite for knowledge. I never thanked you. Thank you. That's kind of nice. Never too late for a thank you, is it?
Never. Never get too many thank yous.
Nancy wrote, dear InterTalk, just a quick note to tell you that a few months ago I purchased one of your weight loss audio tapes. I'm definitely a believer in this technology. I've lost over 40 pounds without the diet mentality of feeling at all deprived. I've got another 20 to 25 pounds to go and feel utterly optimistic about continuing. Thank you so much for empowering me to accomplish this so effortlessly. Charlotte wrote, I'm feeling and experiencing successful results from several of your DVDs. Very effective, remarkable programs. You know, we don't often mention the InterTalk DVDs that employ both visual and audio subliminal messages, as well as frequency patterns to alter brainwave states and produce coherence and deep meditative states, all wrapped up with several other technologies in the colors and geometry that can only be described as sacred. If you haven't tried one, you're missing something special, and there are many titles ranging from building esteem to opening up psychic abilities that you can choose from. Check it out. It's on intertalk.com today. All right, I guess that's our commercial. That was a commercial, wasn't it?
The DVDs are really remarkable.
All right, but I think we better get to the show. So, all right, that's all the time that we're going to take for letters, but I do invite you to opine, and I thank you for all of your feedback. I do genuinely appreciate it. You can express your opinions by emailing me at eldon@eldontaylor.com or by joining me on Facebook. We can't get all of your letters on the air, but your feedback is important to us, and it definitely impacts our programming. We recognize that it is because of your support that our show is successful, and again, we sincerely thank you. Now to today's show, Dying for a Change, Survival Hope and the Miracle of Choice. Our guest today has experienced an extraordinary event, something he labels as much more than your, quote, ordinary near-death experience, close quote. Now, near-death experiences, NDEs as we know them, are pretty spectacular in and of themselves. So when someone claims to have experienced something beyond that, well, they get my attention. Most NDEs tell us about angels, loved ones that have crossed over, pets and so forth that are all met, encountered. Our guest today would appear to have spoken, however, directly with God. Now, one doesn't have to have an NDE to speak with God, at least according to the claims of many. Indeed, nowadays, it seems that everyone from the corner loony to the small-town preacher is speaking to God and sharing with us everything from end times repentance to it's too late, the message, I guess, of the jihadist. So how do we sort out the fact from the fiction? How do we know when to listen and when not? Do we only choose to listen to what we want to believe? Do we put out of mind the nasty and welcome only the touchy-feely good stuff? Or, in the alternative, do we discard the sweet in favor of the sour because of our psychological predisposition to guilt or shame and so forth? When is the message ever free of our interpretation, our expectation, our psychology? Is that even possible? How do we judge it from the outside, then, when someone else brings the message to us? Well, our guest today certainly has an insight to all of this. William Murtha is a writer, philanthropist, and global activist for issues related to personal, social, and global change, the environment, and social responsibility. Dying for a Change is the true story of his near death and how it completely altered his way of life. It's a great read. We'll get to that. Several years after that life-changing incident, he left behind everything that he'd ever worked hard to achieve, and we'll learn more about that directly from him, so let's just get him in here. Welcome to Provocative Enlightenment, Mr. William Murtha.
Thank you, Eldon, and thank you for inviting me on. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you, sir. And, I'm really looking forward to our conversation today. You actually have more than one book that interests me and will definitely interest our audience. But to begin with, you know, we like to get three things out of the way, Bill, about all of our guests. Who they are, what is their message, and how do we use it? So to that end, let's begin by having you tell us about you, your background, schooling, and so forth. The you that was you all before your NDE incident.
Oh, well, I mean, this is going back to 1999, so we're going back to a time when I was really sort of, like a lot of people are today, I was sort of caught up in this materialistic world of wanting stuff and achieving and success. And you just get this niggle that's sort of eaten away at you that something's not right, that something's misfiring. And at the very time that I'm going through all this sort of career success and bigger houses, you know, cars, I had this sort of experience. And it happened for me, I think, just at the right time, you know, to really wake me up and to just, you know, sort of sort my head out where I thought I was going in my life. What happened to me through this accident really showed me that, you know, I'd lost touch with my essence of who I really was. And this is what the whole experience, I believe, was there to teach me.
Okay. You know, I think the best place for us then now is to, let's look at the story of your survival. It's a very gripping story as you read it. So first, please share with us the behind the scenes. You know, like you say, your life is, you're having difficulty and you're struggling. And then you find yourself in this environment where it's freezing water and you have a struggle to survive. Tell us about that whole experience, because, you know, that was an enduring, drawn out process. It's totally unusual.
Well, I mean, to sort of de-stress from, you know, my work-obsessed life and, 80-hour week, I occasionally, when I was home and I wasn't away on business, we have a long sea wall close to where I lived in Dawlish in Devon, which is on the west coast of Britain, and I'd go out for about an hour in the evening after my meal, and it would just completely bring me back down and, you know, get in touch with the elements again. And on this one particular day, I sensed something, like a gut instinct that something was different, but I couldn't conceptualize it. And I was going along happily on racing along on my push bike on this seawall, which is about 20 foot above the water, next to a railway line. And from nowhere, the sort of weather started to pick up. It was a full moon that day, and the weather started to become a bit erratic. And then whoosh, out of nowhere, this 20 foot plus freak wave came crashing over, took me off my bike, and before I knew it, I'm falling down towards the rocks into the freezing cold water. And it's a sort of May time, it's freezing cold, it's just about to get dark. And as I hit the water and missed the rocks, I sort of punched the air with elation, thinking, yes, I've survived. And then it suddenly dawned on me, as the wave started crashing against this 20-foot high algae-covered wall, that I'm in trouble. And I had to quickly get my senses together. And, you know, the freezing cold, even in a few minutes, just starts to really get into your bones, and you know you're in trouble. But I knew that if I didn't try and get myself away from that wall, that I'd really be for it, because, you know, the waves were really sort of battering me. And I managed over a time to sort of get 10, 20, 30, 50 feet out. And it was at that point, you know, probably 10 minutes after that I really started to just, you know, close down. My body started very quickly, within 10 minutes, the hypothermia starts to sort of kick in. I'm fully clothed. And all you can do, you can just sort of use all your energy and all your thought to just keep, luckily I was a great swimmer, and I managed to stay afloat. I was, you know, I clothes on. Luckily, they sort of protected me. But very, very quickly, I got to this state of realizing that, you know, it's getting dark. I'm on my own. What do I do? And it's at that point that I just started to really get angry and really get resentful, knowing that, you know, looking at the sun going down, looking at the town, which is way off in the distance, no one would be walking along that seawall after hours. And just sort of this resentment and this building up within you just to starts to hit you, this realization that you're not going to see your children get married or grow up. And, you know, I had two young girls at the time. And, you know, it's just this sort of anger that you've missed this life that you should have lived and all the things that you should have done and all the stupid things you worried about. And it's at that point, really, when all the sorrow and the bitterness started to subside, that I started to get this unbelievably warm feeling start to come through. And I knew once the pain really started to subside and I actually started to feel good, it was at that point that I started to get scared because I knew I was getting, you know, knocking on the door.
Right. Did you lose consciousness, Bill?
Well, I'm sort of at that stage. I'm in and out of consciousness. So, you know, reality starts to blur between what, you know, is real and what's not real. And you know, I had all this emotion in me of sort of just regret, really, and anger that I'd put myself, this freak wave had happened, but just this anger that I was going to die alone and not be with anyone, particularly my loved ones, and I wouldn't be able to ever see them. And that really got to me because I thought my body perhaps might never get found. You know, they might think I had, you know, might have been suicide. I wouldn't have the opportunity to explain to people what had happened. And that made me angry. And just at this point where I'm starting to drift in and out of consciousness, and I get to the feeling once all the anger's sort of just gone and drifted off, I then got to this space of acceptance, really. I know it sounds bizarre, but I'd started to accept that this is my fate. And I've had quite a good life up to the age of 34. Very sad that it's ended this way, but I just almost got this acceptance, and that's when I started to drift in and out of consciousness. And then that's when this strange, most bizarre thing happened, because I had a fleece on, which is a warm jacket, and I wanted to take it off, and this voice just came in the back of my head and just said, "No, leave it on." And that was the first bizarre thing of what ends up being many stupid things. But this voice just sort of, and I was so sort of shocked and startled that I sort of kept the jacket on. And actually what transpires is that was the one thing that helped me to survive, to keep warm against the hypothermia. But as I started drifting off, it was almost like this flashback, it wasn't a memory. This flashback came in, and I'm suddenly running across the road. I'm 11 years old. I'm a boy. And I'm reliving a moment from when I was a child, when I got knocked over by a car. And it was the most bizarre feeling. It was not as a memory. It was, I was actually there feeling the emotions of this previous experience. Only I seem to be experiencing it from a different perspective, i.e. a more conscious perspective. And I could feel the emotion of being knocked over as the car hits me and then I'm out cold. And as if that wasn't bizarre, I then relived exactly the same scenario again, only this time from the perspective of the woman driver that hit me. And I was in her seat, looking at her painted fingernails. I look at her as the driver hit me as an 11-year-old boy in the road. And I swerve, crash the car, and I actually try to get out the car. And I fall over and stumble, and I'm crying hysterically and shouting, "I've killed him." And that was just the first of many most bizarre flashbacks of all these most poignant, what I've now come to realize, the most poignant emotional times in my life. I felt a bit cheated, really, because I didn't actually get a life review like they talk about on the near-death experiences. I seem to get snapshots of the most highly charged emotional periods of my life.
Yeah, emotion, when you read your book, and it's very well written, when you read your book, emotion is a important part of your NDE message. If I take away the content correctly. And indeed, you know, on page 276, you say something, or actually it's said to you, and I'll just quote it. You cannot spiritually evolve and grow as a human being if you constantly deny certain unwanted emotions. All emotions are sacred. They are messengers from the soul, helping you to make sense of your living experience on earth. Now, that's all the negative emotions, all the fear emotions, all the anger or lust or all those kinds of things that people want to deny and want to say, oh, go away and cancel or whatever else. Why is that so important, Bill?
Well, I think, I mean, for me, emotion played a big part in the book, a big part in my thought process when I was in the water, because something happened to me, you know, that experience when I got knocked over as an 11-year-old, something shifted in me after that, and I know it. I couldn't understand it, I couldn't make sense of it, but I know that the day after I got knocked down as an 11-year-old boy, next day, things felt slightly different. I was starting to pick up other people's emotions, especially my mother at the time, who I was very close to, and something shifted, whether it's an emotional sensitivity, a heightening, an awareness, acceleration, something happened. I couldn't understand it in many ways. I didn't even want to think about it, but something happened. And I think that carried through the rest of my life. Although I put it to the back burner, this interest in emotions and why we're made up of so many trapped, often shadow emotions, as I'd probably call them, I think it's really fundamental, because I think so many of the negative emotions that we all live our life, they should be our greatest teachers. And unfortunately, you know, whether it's grief, loss, all those sort of negative emotions, fear, we hide from them, don't we? And we want to ignore them. And actually, they're our greatest signposts. And I think this negative emotion, I believe, is too often something that we ignore at our peril for our growth as a human being, I believe.
I would concur with that. It's unusual, however, to encounter that. Now, just for my clarity here, maybe the clarity of everybody concerned, when I read reviews, when I look at your book, I'm inclined to believe that this is a conversation between you and what? God? How do you see? I mean, who is this conversation? The quote I read was not your statement. It was the statement given you by this voice that spoke to you. So who do you see was the owner of that voice? It doesn't matter.
I mean, yes, you're right there. I'd agree with that. It doesn't matter. But it took me many, many years. I mean, after them flashbacks in the water of different experiences, I then entered into this period where I went, I don't know where I was. You know, I can't even describe it today, all these years later. But there was a place where I, a bit like we have this inner dialogue, albeit brief, where, you know, when we do something and then we tell ourselves off or something like that. Imagine that expanded to a conversation that lasts hours and hours and hours. It's not just a two-sentence description. It's a whole conversation where every answer of stuff that's just hung around your life and you've wanted answering. I mean, I can't even...
Okay. I'm going to ask you to hold that. We'll pick that up right there when we come back from our break. But we have a hard break in front
Brilliant.
Of us.
Thank you.
We're speaking with William Murtha about his book and experience, Dying for a Change, Survival Hope, and the Miracle of Choice. If you're not already in our chat room, now is a great time to join in the conversation. The chat room does offer an additional dimension to the show, and often our guests visit there during the break. We don't want you to leave, so stay tuned. We'll be right back after these words from some of our friends.
Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
And welcome back. If you're just joining us, we're discussing the book Dying for a Change, Survival Hope, and the Miracle of Choice with author William Murtha. But before we get back to today's show, I want to once again invite you to join me at the Hay House ICDI conferences this year. I will be in Washington, D.C. next month and in Pasadena in October, and I'd love to meet every single one of you personally. Many of your favorite authors will be there as well, so if you can, please do plan to join us. You can get all the details at hayhouse.com. Now, I'd also like to invite you to join me on Facebook, become a fan of Provocative Enlightenment Radio, or a friend, and while you're there, take a look at some of our upcoming events. All right, before the break, we were discussing with William Murtha, Bill, as he prefers to be called, the message in his head. And so, Bill, let's pick it up. You were explaining what the voice was and perhaps even who you believe it belonged to.
I mean, you asked the big questions for the break, Eldon. You know, do you believe it was God? I mean, that's a big question.
Right.
You know, I don't think any of us or many of us actually, you know, that is a big question itself. You know, what is God? You know, we've all got our own interpretations. Is it a higher self, a higher spirit, you know, an essence? You know, I've often still to this day, you know, sort of all these years later, still questioned, you know, what is that presence which was not only inside of me and having a conversation two-way with me. That is no different to a lot of inspiration that people receive, you know, in the arts, whether it's a writer, you know, a screenwriter. You know, there's been so much written about inspiration and where it comes from. And I believe it was a part of me, but I think it's also a part of the whole cosmic soup. There was just this something there, and there was information coming through. Inspired information, and I know I'd not learnt that stuff in my lifetime, so it's coming from another place.
Okay, then see, that's the point I wanted to get to. When you read the book, once you get, you know, into the actual conversation between you and this, we'll just say God, it reads very much like conversations with God. And I know you know who Neil Donald Walsh is.
Yeah.
You have one of his quotes in your book, 100 Words, which is another great book we may get to look at here in a minute. But that's exactly how it reads. And so, you know, the question when you're looking at these kinds of dialogues has to at some point revolve around the credibility. You know, how do you discern the difference between who you're talking to? How do you know it's not... some aspect of yourself that maybe you're actually regurgitating in bits, something that you've read somewhere, something that you've heard somewhere. I mean, on page 207 of your book, you take this question on, and you get a direct answer what the metal stream of thought is and how you separate them. Would you like to explain that to us?
I mean, first of all, I want to day up until the accident, and this is going to sound most strange to a lot of people, but this thing sounds strange to myself, but up to the age of 34, I am from the age of when I left school at 16 years old, I had not read a single book. And that, you know, to most people, it sounds insane. I didn't read a single book. I was caught up in growing businesses, dealing with customers, relationships, family. I wasn't a reader. I could watch films, but I wasn't a reader. And I certainly wasn't. I was probably, back in 1999, at the time of the accident, I was probably the most skeptical, practical, left-brain person. Things like that didn't happen to me. And if you would have given me a Neil Donald Walsh Conversations with God book back then, pre-accident, I would have just laughed. And I would have just poo-pooed it. As much as that makes me feel bad today... Because not until something happens to you and you personally experience it, and then suddenly my whole understanding of what is real and reality, my whole paradigm shifted upside down and inside out. And at that point, it was just, wow, you know, how do I understand it, contextualize it? How do I put this into words? Because, you know, after the accident, I couldn't tell anybody for 18 months because it was just so bizarre, so ridiculous, the flashbacks, the conversation. I couldn't even tell my wife, my best friends. And it wasn't until 18 months after, into a dam burst when I was away in Amsterdam taking clients away. It was the 3 o'clock in the morning, and I had this dam burst where suddenly I sobered up and it almost all come out, and I thought, I've got to share it for my own health, because what had happened after the accident, I started to drink more, work more, get more into the drugs, because I wanted to shut this stuff out. I didn't want to go into that space to understand or begin to understand what had occurred to me, because it sat too much out of reality and what we believe is real. And it's a bizarre feeling when you experience something that you didn't have space for in your understanding of the world. When it does, it throws you up in the air.
It's a great book. It's an adventure story. I think anybody that'll read this, that does read your book, is going to find it inspiring. And at the same time, just a fast adventure story. Great read. But, you know, you have you've opened a door here that I'm going to have to step through and ask you a couple of tough questions. Okay. You hadn't read a book since you were 18 years of age. And anyone that looks at your book will see that there's an inconsistency there, because the book is very well written and it draws on some, you know, an outstanding vocabulary and draws on some constructs and ideas that are deeply philosophical. So, you know, you're either a prodigy child or there is an inconsistency. I'll accept your inconsistency. That said, it's 18 months of silence, and you at that point then begin to write the dialogue as it took place. Is that what you're telling us?
What happened, I couldn't understand anything for 18 months. I couldn't read. Well, I wasn't reading. I just didn't want to understand anything about it. And then after this dam burst in Amsterdam, which is really like a Europe, sort of Vegas, you know, and just to get away, suddenly this stuff opened. And after that, I started to read. For the first time since I left school at 16 years old, I was devouring books, absolutely devouring them. So I'm starting, what the books helped me to do, I remember the first time, it was one of these bizarre situations, I go into a bookshop and I, you know, books find you, don't they, sometimes?
Yep.
And I started to find these books, and one of the first books I ever read was Paulo Coelho's The Alchemist. Then I found Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh. And then whoosh, I was reading 10 books sometimes a week, because the books gave me a framework to start to understand the bizarre experiences that had happened to me. And then the writing just came, and I just started to understand everything that happened to me. And it just gave me hope, because your biggest fear when something happens to you that sits outside of what you perceive to be reality is that you're going mad. You know, was it all made up? Did you just imagine it? And believe me, as a left-brainer, pragmatic, no one could be more skeptical than me at the time.
Okay. So the conversations that we're reading when you read the book, these aren't dictated conversations per se that came directly after. This was processed information that when you reflected on it, it poured out of you. Have I got that right?
Oh, I mean, I would be writing, you know, my family used to go out on a, I think my wife thought I was a bit strange at the time, because she would want to go out for, you know, a Saturday, and I'd want to stay in, you know, and I'd be up writing all night. I'd sometimes survive on 3 hours, because once this door seemed to open, I mean, the book could have been about 10 books, because I wasn't a writer, and I just longhand, you know, with a pen, went through probably 1,000 pages of A4 just to get all this stuff down. And it's bizarre that you can recall so much of it once you open the door to something. Now, it was erratic. It was all over the place. And a good friend of mine, Katie Clark, had to help me to chisel it into some sort of order. But I've still got this hard copy, which is about 3 ring binders full of just splurges that come out that I needed to. And it was almost cathartic. It was just this healing that was going on when I was pouring all this stuff out. And suddenly all my back pains went, and my gut problems that I'd had for probably 18 months. All those physical pains, it was almost they were disappearing as I was managing to get this emotion of the whole event out.
that's a kind of constipation that a laxity doesn't handle. But now, Bill, you know, there are lots of things that happen that are associated with NDEs. We've had a number of guests on our show that are experts on NDEs, from the clinical side, the scientific experimental side, as well as individuals like yourself that have experienced them. One of the things that that seems to be reported often as accompanying an NDE is an increase in IQ. In fact, one of our guests argued that consistently you could test NDE subjects and they would have a higher IQ post-NDE to pre-NDE. How about yourself? Do you feel that there's been a change in your intelligence, overall intelligence?
Absolutely, 100%, without question. And it's almost frighteningly sudden, you know, not straight after the accident because I wouldn't go in that space, but the minute I started opening up, and I found I'd started to get interest in areas that I wasn't previously had any interest at all before, you know, quantum physics and sort of the psychic studies and sort of, you know, the everything, particle science, you know, everything that I've never even had an idea that I'd be interested in seemed to come in now because you seem to start joining all the dots. And I started to have a, I believe, I had a better awareness and I become more empathic and more understanding and compassionate. And it's bizarre. You almost go through like a character change. Unless you view it another way, and perhaps it's always in there, and you're basically just bringing it back to the surface again. This inner child, this inner sort of interest that you've got inside of you.
You know the other kinds of changes that take place. You pretty well have hinted at, but let's flesh that out. We've got a picture of you before. You're the businessman, out of school early. You know, family life has you buried. You're the pragmatist, the left brain kind of a guy. You're dealing with customers. You're not interested in the metaphysical, etc. Who are you today as a result of this experience?
I would say 480 degrees change. You know, I mean, you do. And what gives you hope is when you, I mean, a good friend of mine in Switzerland who's one of the world's top, she worked with Kenneth Ring, Evelyn Ballerino, I've become a very good friend of hers, and she studies thousands of people with NDEs, and the character changes are, they correlate, you know, the sort of things that happen to you, you just, it's almost like somebody takes the lid off your world, and suddenly there's this amazing world out there of different things to look at and understand, and you start to join the dots with how we're all linked on an energy level, and it's almost like your eyes of perception suddenly open to realities. And I dare say a lot of near-death experiences would say the same. The glasses come off, and suddenly you're seeing the world from a not so much a better, but a more colourful way. You understand. You're more interested in what makes life tick.
So are you still in business, still dealing with customers,
I think I get a good world because I keep one foot in both. I still do my writing. I'm writing children's stories at the moment with a sort of metaphysical, spiritual edge. But I also work part-time in the entertainment industry, which is the hustle-bustle of television world and entertainment world. So I think, in a way, keeping one foot in each world keeps you grounded, but it also keeps you more able to communicate with people when you write, I believe.
Okay, and I totally concur with that. Now, you know, your story suggests a future with a race of humans that are fully awake. Fully awake, reaching for their highest potential. I think you refer to it as something like a new awakening. You know, we, of course, have got 2012 approaching, and there are all kinds of folks saying all kinds of things about December 21st, 2012. In some of those people, their stories have already changed. It's not an Armageddon as in an eschatological event, end times. It's now a new consciousness arriving. But, you know, we've heard all of that. We heard that with the year 2000. We heard it with 5-5-2000, the planetary alignment. You know, you can go back and look at the century marks, and there's always some eschatological or consciousness shifting going on, 1800, 1900, 1700. I don't mean to be a cynic, but historically the record of this is rather nonsensical. And, you know, so my question is this. Do you believe that this human wake-up call described in your book will finally be answered, and if so, when?
First of all, I think it's a potential. I think nothing is set in stone. I think we could still go either way. I mean, there was me at the beginning of 2012 thinking that this is a year that we're going to finally kickstart things. And then within the first 3 weeks of this year, I lost my mother, grandmother and father-in-law all in 3 weeks. And suddenly my whole world was turned upside down. And it's funny how the last 6 or 7 months, you know, as we've gone into this year, I think 2012 is turning out to be a very different one to the one a lot of us believed it would be. And I think it's more of a massive shift happening of change. A lot of people seem to be going through a lot of clear out in their lives, a lot of changes, a lot of shifts going on. It's panning out to be very different to what we perhaps sort of on a higher level imagined in our, you know, in our wildest dreams. And I think what is happening now, this is laying the foundation for a potential change. You can see it in business with the politicians in Britain with the last few years, where the expenses scandal with the media now, with all the things that have been going on that, that's starting to come to the surface. All this stuff, which if you look at it from a higher perspective, all seems to be coming to the surface now to be healed and sorted out. If you view it from a negative point of view, you can think the world is in a worse place than it's ever been. But I really, truly believe that all this stuff is coming to the surface for a reason.
You know, I kind of see it. You know, we are a micro aspect of a larger macro, us individually, our societies, our governments, the globe, you know, the universe, etc. That's kind of my view. And so when I read your story, what I see is the necessity to bring all of this negativity out, to put it on the table, so to speak, to look at it, to express it, to be honest about it, not to deny it, and then to heal it, to gain that perspective that you spoke about at the top of the show, that isn't indifferent to the negative, but isn't attached, is no longer attached to the negative. And this kind of pressure cooker, if you will, that I see going on in our world right this minute is tabling all of this emotion, all of these negatives, all of these strong differences between people. So you tell me if I'm on the wrong track here, but it would occur to me that your story is the story of a macro that we can take and put on the story of a micro, I'm sorry, that we can take and put on the macro, the world, and it's pretty well that healing process that's going on now.
Everything you've said, absolutely 100% with you on that one, Eldon. I think this healing, this massive healing that is coming out of the negativity, all this stuff for politicians, expenses scandals, and the media, the way they've constructed stories and things in government that have been hidden, all of this stuff has not been going on for decades. It's been going on for centuries.
Yes.
And you know, the modern world, the last 300-400 years with all this control, albeit subtle. And I think what is happening now, people are becoming more aware, social networking. It's almost like the veneer is being completely stripped off, so we can see. Now, we might not like what we see at the beginning because it looks like hell is bursting out through the seams. But I still got this really strong belief, and talking to a lot of other people that can see it from another viewpoint, is that all of this stuff is coming up to the surface to be healed. And when it is there, then we can shine the light on it and start to change. And I, you know, you've only got to look at the last few years with the changes that are starting to happen. Look at the Olympics with probably the most emotional Olympics that there's ever been. you know, for men as well. And that is a great thing. This massive shift is going on in men's emotions.
Emotions run very deep today. And I think, of course, I spend a great deal of time looking at the mind, the psychology of us, etc. I think, you know, the important thing to remember right now is that they do run deep and that they give rise to the divides. And we don't want to be attached to those emotions, because those divides are the very substance that have created the wars and the tragedies and the horrors of the past. We want to step back from that. We want to realize that this is a healing process. We don't want to be so invested in our biases that we're unable to hear or to heal.
True. Yeah. Hey,
let me ask you this, sir. You know, your bottom line message, when you're all said and done with this, if you have to say, this is what this experience is all about and the message I would like to share with your audience today, what would that be?
I mean, the message for me from my life experiences in the water were, you know, that there seems to be so much there that it was within our grasp, and it's there when we open our eyes to it. And I think this is what the whole thing with the with Switzerland, with the collider, you know, which is going to start understanding photons and nuclear subatomic particles in a bigger way. Out of that, from what I'm being told, because I study and spend a lot of time looking at that, that is really going to start to help us understand that we're all linked on an energy level. And emotion, I don't know why, but emotion seems to constantly, because it is, in, you know, it's energy in motion in our bodies. Feelings don't seem to go away. They're there, trapped in the body. You know this with your brilliant work as well, Eldon, that emotion plays such a... And that's my biggest message out of all my work, I think, even the children's book writing, is emotions are there. And I think for too many centuries, particularly with the male population, we've held emotions in to our detriment for our growth.
I concur. I totally concur. William Murthy, your book is a fantastic read. I'm going to get that on the record here. I loved reading it. It went very, very fast. I enjoyed it very much. But for our audience, tell everybody, how's the best way for them to connect with you, learn more about you, more about your work, more about your books, because you have more than just Dying for a Change.
Yeah, I've got, if you go to my website, which is William Murthy, so that's William Murtha, MURTHA.co.uk. You can find out about Dying for a Change. You can also find out about the Visionaries book, 100 Words, which is where I've interviewed hundreds of visionaries for the future over a four-year project. And that's an interesting project, because I wanted to get visions and hopes of all these people from across the spectrum of quantum physics and spirituality and healing. And that ended up being a really enlightening project for me.
It's a great book, too. 100 Words, I have it in my hand, from 200 visionaries, share their hope for the future. And, you know, each one of them, each page in this book is a thought from each of these visionaries, and they basically, they mirror what we've been talking about today. Well, we've come to the end of another hour of Provocative Enlightenment, and I want to thank you all for joining us, and I hope you enjoyed our show, and we'll join us again next week, same time and same place. Bill, we appreciate you being with us today. We wish you all the best. If you have comments on our show, do let us know. Okay, until next time, wherever you are in the world, remember, believing in yourself always matters.